to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LePonier. We have True History coming up in this hour. Later on, Edward Arnold portrays Mr. President from 1947. But right now, it's the Cavalcade of America with a Civil War story dedicated to Cincinnatus Shyrock, whom you'll hear all about in The Adventure on the Kentucky. This story, against the backdrop of the Civil War, was first heard on NBC on March 11, 1952, and stars Richard Widmark, Dick York, and Les Damon.
Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Tonight's story, Adventure on the Kentucky, starring Richard Widmark as Cincinnatus Shyrock.
The story I've got to tell involves an incident of the Civil War, to use the Yankee expression. It begins in 1861, September of 1861, to be exact. And I, Cincinnatus Shyrock, was doing the double job of operating the ferry across the Kentucky River and teaching school in the little town of Versailles.
Mr. Shyrock, sir.
You have a question, Master Drew?
Yes, sir. Is Kentucky getting in the war?
Our homework for tomorrow has nothing to do with current events. It's about Roman history. Now on page 74 of your Roman history books, you'll find the story of Cincinnatus. Yes, that's right. Naturally, this story has a kind of personal attachment for me because it's about a Roman whose name I proudly bear. I'll ask you to read up on that story and be ready to talk on it tomorrow.
But, Mr. Schreier, Jimmy says General Polk has a Confederate army right across the river in Anderson County. We going to join up with them?
Well, now, according to the governor, we're taking no sides. Just kind of sitting on the fence.
Who cares a lick about that pussyfooting governor? Hooray for Jeff Davis, the boys in gray!
Yeah. Now, hold on, boys. Hold on. I think it might be well for you boys to remember the wise words of Ben Franklin. Poor Richard says, "Painting and fighting are best seen from a distance." Now, you boys think that over. Class dismissed. Olive, I'm home.
Mr. Cobbs is here to see you.
Oh?
We're in the living room.
Well, afternoon, Jane.
Afternoon, Cincinnati.
Howdy, Father.
Hello, son.
I was just talking with Olive about Johnny here. He's sprouting like summer corn. You could eat pie off your head right now.
Yeah, he's a good boy. What brings you over this side of the river, James? I don't remember ferrying you across.
I forded over up near Tyrone. Been over to Lexington.
Oh. Business?
In a way. You know, General Leonidas Polk has a Confederate regiment at Lawrenceburg.
Yes, I heard.
Acting on his commission, I've come over this side of the river to recruit a company of volunteers.
I want to go, too. Will you take me, Mr. Cobbs?
Well, we aren't turning down any healthy prospects, especially if they own their own mounts.
I've got the fastest colt in the country.
Is that a fact?
You're a little young for soldiering, son.
I'm not.
War is a grim business, Johnny. It's not the fine adventure that you think it is.
Maybe not, Cincinnatus. But war has come, and that makes it our business. That's why I'm here. I'm counting on you for our company of Kentucky volunteers.
Counting on me?
That's what I said. You're with us, aren't you?
Well, I'm with my people, yes.
Then I can put your name on my list.
No, I don't think so. Not just now.
You turning me down?
No, I'm saying that I don't think I'll join up. Not just now. I don't think I'd be doing right joining up. Let me tell you something, James. War is a complicated business. It's not just soldiering.
What is it, then?
It's every man doing the job he's best fitted to do. Now, I'm an architect and a school teacher and a ferrying man, none of which professions has made me especially fit for soldiering.
Little training will take care of that.
Might be. Might make a fair to middling soldier of me at that. But fair to middling efforts don't make for winning wars, James. It's every man doing what he knows best to do, and doing that twice as good as he ever believed possible.
That's shilly-shallying language.
Is it?
It's the kind of language that can cause a lot of trouble.
Well, I'm not looking for trouble, James.
No? Good day to you.
Won't you stay for a bite to eat, Mr. Cobb?
Don't think so, Olive.
Well,
I don't think I'll be accepting hospitality from a man who I label a coward.
James.
Good day, Olive.
Father, they called you a coward.
Do you believe that, Johnny?
Well, what else can I believe?
He'll spread the story all over Anderson County.
Maybe he will, Olive. But I'm doing what I think is best.
I'm joining up.
You're doing no such thing, Johnny.
I am.
Now, maybe you can eat pie off the top of my head, young fellow, but that still doesn't mean I can't bend you in half and give you a lacing if you deserve one. Now, you'll do no joining up, and that's final. You're too young.
But I don't...
That's enough, Johnny. I see who's at the door.
Hello, Johnny. Remember me?
Oh, Captain Morgan. Dad, Mother, Captain Morgan. Oh, come in, please, sir.
Well, Captain Morgan.
How are you both?
Well, we're fine, fine indeed. How nice to see you again.
Well, this is a pleasurable surprise, Captain Morgan.
Well, 2 years ferrying hasn't changed you much, Cincinnati. You look brown and healthy as a coon cub.
And I am.
I bet you're glad you gave up architecting in Lexington for the outdoor life.
Well, let's say architecting gave me up. I've turned from house builder to ferry captain.
Well, it's providence. Pure and simple providence that has you owning that ferry, Cincinnati.
Why is that?
Well, I'm moving the Lexington Rifles out of the state.
You mean you're going over to the Confederates, Captain?
Down to the drummer boy. But we've got to get across that river before morning. There's a regiment of bluecoats camped right in the county fairground.
Mm.
Once they get wind that we've pulled out of Lexington, they'll be after us faster than a hound dog after a tabby.
How far behind are your men?
Well, an hour or two at the most.
Mm-hmm.
They should be at your landing by 8 o'clock.
Oh, but they aren't crossing.
But not crossing?
No, it's impossible. The river's flooding. My ferry couldn't handle any normal traffic right now, and your loaded wagons would swamp us for sure.
But we've got to get across, Cincinnati. The Yankees will be on our tails by midnight.
Well, I'm just telling you plain facts.
Facts be hanged. We've got to get across.
Oh, that'd be mighty risky.
Cincinnati, men going off to war expect to take a few risks. I'd rather chance the Kentucky than Yankee Rifles, at this stage anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that basis, I guess we could give it a try. Johnny, go fetch old Billy. Tell him to be at the landing in an hour.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I got something else in my mind.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, I'd like to offer you a commission as a lieutenant in my company.
Well, now, that's a funny thing, Captain Morgan.
What is?
Jimmy Cobbs was here just before you arrived. He wanted me to join up with Polk's volunteers.
Did you?
No.
Why not?
Because I didn't think it was the right thing to do. Not for me. You see, everybody's jumping into this thing whole hog at the moment without thinking if what they're doing is right. Now, as for me, I intend to do a little more thinking.
Is there time for that?
There's always time for good, hard thinking.
Well, that's up to you and your conscience, Cincinnati. Will I see you at the ferry in an hour?
I'll be there.
Think over what I said. Remember, sooner or later, you're going to have to take sides.
Maybe so, maybe so. But like you said, this is a matter between me and my conscience. Billy, you all set?
Yeah, all set.
Good. Here come the troops and wagons. We'll have to take them aboard at once. Can we do it?
I reckon so. Yes, yes, we all said.
All right. Captain Morgan, we're ready for you. You can send the wagons and the men aboard the ferry now.
First platoon, move aboard.
As we loaded the first troops and wagons into the boat and started crossing to the opposite shore, I couldn't help worrying about my wife, Olive. She's a strong-minded woman, but I still worried anyway. Had I known what was going on back home, I'd have worried even more.
Open up in the name of the United States Army. Open up or we'll break down the door.
You break down that door, I'll horsewhip you into the river.
Sounds real friendly, doesn't she?
What do you want?
Is this the home of Cincinnati Shryock?
It is.
Are you Mrs. Shryock?
I am.
We were told your husband runs the ferry below here. Where is he?
He isn't here.
Where can we find him?
How should I know?
Are you alone?
My son is upstairs.
Any soldiers passed by in the last hour or two?
I've been asleep.
Ma'am, our Yankee troops are marching up this way and they need food and water. We're reconnoitering for provisions.
You got a larder in the kitchen, haven't you?
I have, and they belong to nobody but me.
Let me remind you, ma'am, that failure to cooperate with us could be regarded as an act of treason against the United States.
There are several United States south of here. Incidentally, this particular state happens to be neutral.
We're not going to get very far with this one, sir.
Now, would it be violating your neutrality if we asked you to cook some supper just for us?
I have three brothers wearing gray uniforms. I'm not going to cook for people who are fighting them.
Well, that's up to you, ma'am, but invitation or no, we're staying. Sergeant, you better go down to the ferry land and see what's going on.
Wait just a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
I won't cook for you, but you're welcome to what you can find in the kitchen.
Hey. Is that fresh biscuits I'm smelling, ma'am?
That's right. It is biscuits. Just baked. And there's some ham, too. Help yourself.
Well, you kind of changed sides in a hurry, ma'am. A minute ago, you were saying you wouldn't cook for men who are out fighting your brothers.
I still won't cook for you, but the food is there. And if you just help yourself, well, that isn't as if I cooked it, especially for you.
Oh, yes, that's exactly right.
Now, the kitchen's through there. Help yourself. If there's anything you can't find, call up the stairs. I'll be down in a minute.
All right. Might as well, I guess.
Sure. Come on. That's real southern hospitality.
Johnny, Marvin, what is it? Listen carefully. Union soldiers are downstairs. They say a whole regiment will be here any minute. Now, quickly, get down to the ferry landing and warn Father and Captain Morgan. I'll hold them here as long as I can.
You'll be all alone.
I'll be all right. Now, don't argue. Get to the ferry and warn Father. Quickly, use the back door. I'll try to keep those soldiers from getting to the ferry.
All right, Mother, I'm going.
Hurry now. I'll go back downstairs.
Come in, ma'am. Let me pull up a chair for you. You know, I was just saying, cooking is something you southern ladies really know how to do.
What was that?
Door slam.
Oh, must be the wind. I didn't hear anything.
Wait a minute. Look, out the window, that kid running.
Who is it?
I don't care who it is. He's up to something. Get after him. Hurry, follow him.
I finally managed to get all of Captain Morgan's troops across the river. Horses, wagons, and supplies. The Kentucky, southern lady that she is, proved real hospitable to Captain Morgan and his men. She held her temper in, and except for an occasional impish toss of her head, she showed her good manners and high breeding. Then my good mate Billy and I and our crew returned to the landing on our side of the river.
Father! Father.
Johnny, what are you doing down here?
The Yankees. The Yankees up at the house.
What?
They told Mother the whole regiment's marching up. They'll be at the house any minute.
How many is there?
Well, just two when I left. Stuffing themselves full of ham and biscuits.
Well, that's one way of holding an army off.
Is Captain Morgan safe across the river?
He's across, but it'll take hours for him to move his heavy wagons up over the bluff.
We gotta stop the Yankees and keep them from crossing the river.
What, hold back a whole regiment? That'll take a powerful lot of biscuits, son. Come along, we better get back to the house. What's going on here?
You, Shryock?
Olive? Where's my wife?
She's in the kitchen. She's perfectly safe. Olive, you all right?
Yes. Where's Johnny?
I'm right here, Ma. I was just putting up the horses.
All right, who are you? What do you want?
I'm Captain Watson of the 1st Ohio. You operate the ferry here?
Yes.
Want to arrange to have my men taken across to Kentucky right away?
The river can't be crossed. It's flooding.
Sergeant?
Yes, Captain.
This man followed your son down to the ferry. Tell Mr. Shryock what you saw.
Morgan's men were across the river making their way up the bluff on the other side.
Thank you, Sergeant.
So?
You managed to get Captain Morgan and his men across. Well, didn't you?
You heard your man. Morgan's across.
If you got Morgan across, you can get us across. I'm going to make a bargain with you.
A bargain?
Yes, you took Morgan over on your ferry. Now you're going to take us. My orders are to catch up and either capture or destroy Morgan before he can join up with the Confederate Army. And I mean to carry out those orders. I could put you under military arrest for giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I could do that. But I'll agree to forget the whole matter if you do for us what you did for Morgan.
You mean use the ferry?
That's right.
Well, I don't know any reason why I shouldn't do that, Captain.
Father.
I'm loyal to the state of Kentucky, and our state is neutral in this war. So, I'm at your service, Captain.
You're going to do it. I just can't believe you, Father.
Someday you'll understand.
Oh, I'll never understand. I hope you sink in the river.
Johnny, come back. Listen. Olive, please,
I've got to... If you've been forced at the point of a gun, I might understand it. But to make a cheap bargain with an enemy...
Olive, I...
Captain Watson, you might as well make yourself comfortable while we discuss this.
I don't want to discuss it.
I'm really sorry, ma'am, to have to cause you this unpleasantness.
I'm in no need of your apologies.
Man's got to admire the high spirit of your southern women, Shryock.
Olive's folks are all Georgia people.
I understand. Now, how bad is this river flooding?
Well, you ever seen the Kentucky River, Captain?
No.
It's a cantankerous old mud stream. Never can make up its mind if it wants to be a crick or a mill wash. More moods than a widow woman.
Yes, well,
and twisty and vexing as she can be, too. Smooth and silky as China cloth one minute. Back up like an angry cat the other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that...
Why,
river...
You're wasting time. When do we get started?
Well, Captain Watson, I'm afraid I can't guarantee my crew. They're all rebel-minded, and they're pretty exhausted, besides.
Well, that's no problem. My men can help take over the oars. What we need is a navigator. You can do it?
Yes.
One last word, Shryock.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven help anyone who tries to stop us. Neutral state or not, I have ways of seeing that they'll rot in a northern jail until the war is over. Getting some of my horses aboard, Shryock.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, Captain. The ferry's overloaded as it is. Billy, get up front with the logging pole. Fend off the driftwood.
I ain't gonna do it.
Do as you're told, Billy.
Hooray for Captain Morgan!
Billy!
Now, who's gonna make anything of it?
Well, I think we better leave your helper here on shore.
Oh, someone's got to fend off the driftwood.
Now, give me the pole. I'll tend to that myself.
As you like, Captain. You stay behind, Billy.
I hope they all end up as breakfast for the catfish. Well, I reckon a catfish has got more sense than to get indigestion from Yankee Polecat.
You see, Billy's got a temper.
So I see. All right, now what do I do?
Well, you just stand forward on the prow. If you see any driftwood logs headed toward the ferry, you just fend them off with a pole. Is that all? That's all.
Well, I think I can manage that.
Yes, I'm sure you can. And if you can't reach one with the pole, just call out to me which way to rudder it. You understand?
Yes, certainly.
Good, then, good. You get your men to push us out into the stream, if you don't mind, Captain. Put a few on the oars.
Sergeant, get your men ready to give us a shove.
Yes, sir.
Four of you on the right side, four on the left. Take up the oars.
All ready, Captain?
Ready.
Then let's be off.
All right, you men. Charles, quick. On.
Your men at the oars, dig in. Row.
Watch that driftwood coming at us, Captain.
I see it. I got that one fine. There's another.
More rolling down. Here comes the big log.
Left. Left. No. Right oar. There's too many. The river's full.
Fend them off, Captain. Better hold them off.
Yeah, well, I'm trying. Left oar. The left oar. I said the left. Look out for that log. Look out.
Oars in. Oars in. Better get those oars in.
There's another one coming.
Get down. Everybody down. Don't use your oars.
We're spinning.
Go in the boat or we'll tip for sure.
What do we do, Spyock? What do we do?
Pray, Captain. Pray loud and pray fast. That's all that's left to do.
Holding back the river, not then. She took the ferry in her teeth and sent us spinning downriver, tearing along like a barn roof in a twisty. How we managed to keep from being swamped, I don't know. But luckily enough, about a mile below the ferry crossing, the river widens out a bit. The flood water slackened off, and a mud bank came into sight.
Hold tight. I'm going to try and beat her on that mud bank. Here she goes. All right, you can get up now. We're stuck in solid.
Yeah, we're in a fine fix, Shryock.
Yes, that's true.
How far downstream are we?
Oh, I don't know. Quite a ways, I guess.
But we've got to get back there.
Well, now, that presents a problem.
We can't leave the ferry mired here in the mud bank. I've got all my equipment aboard.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we got to get back, I guess we just got to get back.
Well, all right, how?
Well, rather luckily, I've got a strong towing line aboard.
Towing line?
Sure, we'll have to haul her back upstream.
Paul, you need mules for that.
Men were hauling boats upstream long before mules were invented, Captain. Here's the rope. I'm afraid your men will have to get their feet wet.
Oh, what a mess. All right, men, over the side.
You heard me, over the side, all of you.
Here you go, lads. Take the line. Now, just get to pulling.
You heard him. Get to pulling.
Good strong lad.
How long will it take us to get back to the ferry landing at this rate, Tryon?
Well, at this rate, maybe 3 hours, maybe four.
4 hours? By that time, Morgan will be safe in Confederate lines.
Quite possible, quite possible.
We'll never get to him.
Captain Watson,
huh?
Remembering back to what you said at the house about how to go bad with anybody who kept you from catching up to Morgan, well, I'm just thinking, Captain, do you think you've got a jail up north big enough to hold the Kentucky River?
I stayed up to speak with you.
Yes?
Cincinnatus, why did you do it? Why did you agree to take Captain Watson and those Yankee troops across the river?
Oh, Olive, I'm afraid you and Captain Watson both misunderstood me.
Misunderstood?
Yes. I said that they could use the ferry, but I never said a word about getting them across. Come here to the door a minute. Take a look, Olive.
It's the Yankees.
That's right. Marching back to Lexington.
Then they didn't get across.
No, they didn't get across. Seems like there was a little accident.
Accident?
Well, in a manner of speaking, of course. You see, old Billy wouldn't make the crossing. So this Captain Watson, he took over the prow and the logging pole.
You mean he tried to fend off the river, Lord?
Yes, he tried.
But that takes skill and years of practice.
You know, Olive, I clean forgot to tell that to the captain.
Well, doggone it, Shyrock, you done it. You done it.
Done what?
You held back the Yankees, that's what you done. And that's something the South ain't never going to forget. why, I bet you they'll make you a general.
Who, me? No, I'm just a school teacher, so. Uh-oh, listen. The school bell. It's past 8 o'clock. Now, what's it going to look like, teacher, being late for school? Sorry, I'm tardy, boys. The ferry got in late. Now then, back to our lesson in Roman history. Master Connors?
Yes, sir?
Suppose you tell us the story of Cincinnatus.
Lucius Quintius Cincinnatus was a Roman legendary patriot. He left his farm to defeat the equi and the bull chi who were threatening Rome from the east and southeast. He returned from battle, put aside his power and honors, and went back home to his farm.
Well, is that all you got out of the story?
Was there any more to it, sir?
Well, I'm afraid you missed a rather important point, Master Connors. You see, the story of the Roman Cincinnatus is not a routine lesson in war and heroism. It's something a great deal more. The quality in Cincinnatus that deserves our attention is this. Once he had served his people, he went back to his quiet ways again. You see, boys, like Cincinnatus, we never know just how or when or in what manner the call to duty may come. But we should always be ready.
Thanks to Richard Widmark and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story, Adventure on the Kentucky.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday from March 11th, 1952 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Mr. President is on the air with Edward Arnold portraying one of the presidents pre-1947 in an on-air historical detective show of sorts, where we, the listeners, have to figure out which president Edward Arnold is portraying, although he'll reveal it at the end of the broadcast. This from September 4th, 1947, with co-star Betty Lou Gerson.
Mr. President, starring Edward Arnold. Mr. President, presented by the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations. Mr. President, home in the White House, the elected leader of our country, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who've lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President. Now, Edward Arnold as Mr. President. Let's visit him in the White House. It's evening and only one window shows the light, the study on the ground floor. We enter and find ourselves in the corridor.
Good evening. I'm the President's secretary. Won't you go right in, please? Some visitors for you, Mr. President.
Hello. Sit down, won't you? Have you ever noticed how most good friends enjoy an argument and argue just for the sake of arguing? I remember the favorite topic of my gang when I was a boy was the size of Cousin Minnie's fortune and whether or not her husband wore his toupee when he went to bed. Well, I want to tell you a story about two of that gang and an argument we have never finished. Which president was I? See if you can guess. One evening, a few years before I entered the White House, I was having dinner with these two friends, Bill Rives and John Botts. We were already in politics, but we were hardly talking about that.
Just a moment. Rainbow trout in the James River?
Of course. I caught a rainbow trout in the James.
Hey, now, break it up.
They were speckled trout.
Bill, I know a rainbow trout when I see one. And I caught four that day.
I've lived on the James River, swum in the James River, and fished in the James River ever since I was born. There are no rainbow trout in the James River.
Gentlemen,
Bill,
please.
You can take my word.
Oh, I believe that you believe they were rainbow trout, all right, only they weren't.
Every man has to see for himself and make up his own mind.
And what's the matter with that?
Well, I'll tell you. Now, Listen, Bill, why are we arguing?
Now, that's better.
Right. Let's all go fishing tomorrow and settle it that way.
No, I call that a good compromise.
Bill, you hear that, John says? Compromise. I guess we could both learn from him, couldn't we?
I bet you we never do.
Oh, if you two would only give up arguing about fishing.
John, it's healthy to argue.
Well, yes, I know, but you two carry it too far. Now, look, here we are, friends for years. We feel alike and think alike on almost every subject under the sun. There's no limit to what we could do together if you two would only stop arguing. For instance, someday I hope to run for the House of Representatives in Washington. Well, you two could help me.
Oh, you'll do very well there, John.
Yes, Congress is a good place for a born compromiser.
Well, how about you?
Well, I wouldn't want to give John any competition. I'll stick to the courts. I wouldn't mind being a judge. How about you, Bill?
I know what I want to do, where I want to go. To the United States Senate.
And so I oppose the election of my friend Bill Rives to the United States Senate. For years, you, my fellow citizens of this state, have known me and John Botts and William Rives as members of this party and as close and very dear friends. John Botts has entered the House of Representatives. And you are all aware of his fine record there. When you elected John Botts to his office and me to mine, and after the death of our president I entered the White House, it was clear that you expected of us something great. But in order to carry out these wishes, we must have the cooperation of every member of our party in the government. That is why I ask you to vote against William Rives. He must not go to the Senate.
Mr. President, why did you make that speech against me?
Bill, I asked you to come here to Washington so that I could explain to you.
You talked as though I were a bitter enemy.
Bill, I have the same regard for you that I always had.
Politics is teaching you to talk like a politician.
The White House is teaching me what my job is and that it comes first.
Well, how can you do a job, any job, if you go back on your friends? If you desert a friend, you'll desert a principal just as quickly.
Now, wait, Bill. I didn't attack you in the campaign for any personal reason. I can't have you in the Senate because I know how you stand. And I've got a hard fight on my hands with Senator Gray and his group.
And what makes you so sure I'll follow him?
Bill, the senator is going to fight for another bank of the United States. And I know how you stand on this issue. Don't you see? It means another huge financial organization owned by the government with branches in every state. That's bad.
But we need a national bank. It would give our money a greater stability.
The wrong kind of stability, Bill.
Wrong kind?
Iron controlled by a few men in Washington.
Well, there may be advantages in that.
Bill, you remember down home all those small farmers and merchants and storekeepers?
Yes.
When they needed a little money, where did they go?
Well, to the Farmers and Merchants Bank, I suppose.
And they usually got their loans, didn't they? And pay them back because they know the bank officers and the bankers know them. And they trust each other. But suppose those little banks all over the country are swallowed up by one enormous national bank.
Oh, I'm not so sure that's what would happen.
The power of the national bank would breed the desire for more power and the power to get power. Where would the storekeepers and merchants and farmers be in a situation of that kind?
Some people think that our small banks are too weak, too old-fashioned.
Of course. Those people want power concentrated in one huge bank that they can manipulate to their own advantage. Oh, no, Bill. You don't see this as I do. We must have men in the Senate who agree with us, not with Senator Gray.
The bank bill hasn't even been put before the country.
It was before the country a few years ago, and it was smashed. Now, I want to see it smashed again.
Mr. President, I remember once with John Botts, we laughed because neither you nor I were compromisers. Well, we were right. And now I'm going to fight harder than ever to get into the Senate. And whatever happens, believe me, there'll be no compromise. Good afternoon, Mr. President.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ives. Mr. President, do you want to check your appointments for tomorrow?
What did you say, Miss Sarah?
Well, your appointments for tomorrow.
Are there many? Maybe they can be put off.
Oh, I'm afraid that...
No, Miss Sarah. I'll keep them all. I only wish sometimes that I'd never seen the White House. I hate smashing a man's career, even if it is my job.
Yes, I know. Mr. Rives may be elected anyway, Mr. President.
You know, I almost hope he is.
Mr. President.
Yes, Miss Sarah.
Congressman Botts is here to see you.
Have him come in, will you, please?
Certainly, Mr. President. Mr. Botts, the President will see you now.
Thank you, Miss Sarah.
Hello, John. It's good to see you.
Mr. President. I've just arrived in Washington for the new session. I've come to pay my respects.
To an old friend?
To the president and to an old friend.
John, I suspect you're one of the few men in the House or Senate who feel that way.
Oh, nonsense, Mr. President.
Look at the House of Representatives. Apart from you and a few others, who else is going to stand with me in this fight against the bank?
Are you making that your fight, Mr. President?
More than ever. And in the Senate?
Well, Senator Gray has already proposed his bill for a Bank of the United States, and so, of course, he'll be against you. But you have other friends in the Senate.
None as powerful as Gray.
Well, there's Bill Rives.
I know how Bill stands. Besides, he has never forgiven me for opposing his election. Have you seen him?
Oh, once or twice.
When you see him again, would you tell him that I'm personally delighted he was elected, even over my opposition? John, don't leave out the word personally.
You don't think he'll change in his feelings about the bill?
He has never indicated that he would.
Well, then, Mr. President, I'm afraid you haven't as many allies in the House and Senate as I thought.
Just the same, I'm going to make this fight the issue of my administration.
You'll be taking on a powerful set of opponents.
Do they frighten you?
Well, I only like to take them into account. I wonder if...
Yes?
Well, suppose Senator Gray were willing to change his bill somewhat to meet your views. Well, what would you do then?
I don't believe that amendments would change the real issue. When does the bill come up in the House for its first vote?
Oh, in another day or so, Mr. President.
It'll be passed, I suppose.
Senator Gray's allies in the House hope for a very heavy vote in favor in case you veto the bill later. A word from you either way would still have a powerful effect.
John, you know how I feel. I'll leave it to your good judgment as to how to express my views. If my aide, Alfred Lawton, can be of help to you, let me know, will you?
I'll be going now, Mr. President. Thank you for your time.
Now, John, I hope we'll be able to see each other often. We've been friends a long time, and, well, we always looked forward to being in Washington together, didn't we?
I'm honored by your confidence, Mr. President. I'll remember everything you said.
Thank you.
Mr.
It's very strange, Miss Sara. Friendship, I mean.
I always thought it was a simple thing, Mr. President.
Oh, it ought to be. But look what's happened to me and John Botts and Bill Rives. When we were younger, Bill Rives and I were really the closest. Now I'm the president. And it's John Botts who comes here as a friend. It's not the way I thought it would be.
I think you can blame Washington for that.
Somehow friendship ought to be able to survive Washington. Mm. You know, if Bill Rives were to come through that door now, I know we could be friends again.
He may find it hard to forgive you, Mr. President.
But in the end, he won. He was elected to the Senate. I was hoping somehow that would change his feelings.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Miss Sarah, I've got to see the president.
Mr. President, it's Mr. Lawton.
Mr. President, have you changed your stand on the bank bill?
Certainly not.
Not in any particular?
Not in any particular. Why?
I've just come from the House of Representatives.
Well, the bill is up for a vote today, isn't it?
Yes, and Congressman John Botts is telling the others that you're in favor of the bill.
Botts? Why, that's impossible.
He's saying that he had an interview with you and that you intimated you would not veto the bill.
Lawton, I told him exactly the opposite. He's an old and dear friend of mine. He's always known how I felt about the bank bill. There's no way he could have misunderstood me.
I'm very sorry, Mr. President, but he's already pulling votes over in favor of the bill by quoting you.
I don't understand it.
I have a theory, sir.
What?
Mr. Botts is known to have become personally very friendly with Senator Gray. And as you know, Senator Gray has presidential ambitions.
And Botts is attaching himself to a future president? Lawton, go back to the House of Representatives and tell every man you can find that if John Botts says I'm in favor of the bill, he's a liar.
Mr. Botts. Oh, Mr. Botts.
Huh? Oh, yes, Mr. Lawton.
I've just come from the White House. The president denies that he told you he might be in favor of the bank bill.
Really, Mr. Lawton?
The president authorizes me to say the same thing to every gentleman in the House.
I'm afraid it's a little too late for that.
What?
The bill was voted on not 15 minutes ago and passed. Good day, Mr. Lawton.
Lawton, I don't understand how Butts could do it.
Mr. President, I still stick to my theory of ambition.
Mr. President, Mr. Lawton, couldn't you give Mr. Botts some credit for honest conviction about the bank bill?
Of course, but to come here as if he was still my personal friend to get my views on the bill, which are clear and definite, and then to quote me exactly the opposite?
With the result that the House passed the bill with a heavy majority. So heavy that they could repass the bill over a veto.
You will veto it, Mr. President?
I told Botts that I was making this bill the main issue of my term in office. My views were known before the campaign, and nobody can say they're surprised.
There's a further danger now, Mr. President. The bill comes before the Senate next week, and they may be impressed by the size of the House vote. And there are quite a few people in the country who are for the bank.
Well, I've only got one chance now, Lawton. That the Senate vote, even if it's in favor of the bill, will be close. Then my veto might be sustained.
Mr. President?
Yes.
When both houses of Congress pass a bill by sizable majorities, isn't it dangerous for a president to veto it?
Miss Sara, if it's true that the overwhelming majority of my fellow citizens want this bill, they'll get it. But not before I've told them why it's wrong and the terrible harm it can do. Then if they still want it, well, I'll have fought a hard fight and lost. Meantime, Lawton, you might do a little scouting on how the Senate feels.
I'll start right now, sir. Good afternoon,
Good afternoon. Miss Sara, this is not the best day I ever had.
Evidently, friendship isn't strong enough to survive Washington.
Well, evidently not. And how can I blame a man for being ambitious and sacrificing everything to it? Come to think of it, Miss Sara, the way I feel about John Botts now must be about the way Bill Rives feels about me. And I'm afraid it's not very friendly.
I came as soon as I could, Mr. Lawton. Am I too late?
Senator Gray's been speaking for some time already, and he's got the Senate in the palm of his hand. You can hear him from the Senate gallery. Shall we go in?
Yes, please.
And the Bank of the United States would give our nation the economic sinew she needs to lift her to world leadership. Today, in the competition of trade in which all nations find themselves, we enter the contest weak and weaponless against other powers of the world.
That's a strong appeal to nationalistic feeling, Miss Sarah.
Yes,
I have
made
plain that a Bank of the United States is as needful to our economic growth as is the Constitution to our political growth. I have only one more point to make.
The House of Representatives has already passed this bill by a majority large enough to defeat a possible veto by the men in the White House. We must do the same to show him that the overwhelming will of the majority must prevail. Who is he to stand alone against us all? When you vote, gentlemen, remember, we want not only victory, but victory unchallenged.
He's made a strong appeal.
I'm afraid the bill will pass, Miss Sarah, with a large majority.
But the president has some friends in the Senate. Isn't anyone going to challenge him?
Worry may have frightened them.
But the bill has to be debated. Look, Mr. Lawton.
Yeah, the chair is recognizing a speaker.
The chair recognizes the senator from Virginia.
It's Rives, William Rives.
That means just another speech supporting Senator Gray and the bill.
We can say one thing for Senator Rives. At least he's taking his revenge in the open.
Gentlemen of the Senate, on the faces of some of my colleagues, whom I know to be against the bill, I see discouragement. But the bill has not yet been passed. I, for one, see no reason to be discouraged. And I will not let Senator Gray cram it down my throat.
Mr. Lawton, listen to me.
I can hardly believe it.
Gentlemen, for a long time, I was in favor of Senator Gray's proposal until the good senator gave me an opportunity to study it. I am convinced that this bill in its present form would be unconstitutional. Furthermore, I wonder if it has occurred to you, gentlemen, that this bank might become an octopus, gobbling up our smaller banks until it finally gobbles up the federal government itself. Gentlemen, I, for one, prefer not to be gobbled up by a Bank of the United States or by Senator Gray. And thus I ask you to consider carefully the facts before you vote for this bill.
And, Mr. President, he was the first one to stand up and defy Senator Gray. It was magnificent.
Rives? Bill Rives?
Yes. We could feel the effect of his speech all through the Senate chamber. It was clear he'd made up his own mind and was going to speak it no matter what happened.
And Gray was furious, I suppose.
Livid with rage. Obviously, he expected the bill to go through with hardly any debate. And then to hear a new senator get up and defy him.
Now, it's strange, Miss Sarah. The man I counted on turned against me. And Bill Rice, well, he's come to my rescue. Miss Sarah, it means we shall have a chance. I know Bill Rice. When he gets an idea into his head, nothing can move it. He'll certainly persuade some of the other senators that he is right.
Oh, it would be wonderful if the Senate defeated the bill, Mr. President. Excuse me, just a moment, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's Senator Rives.
Senator Rives? Bill. Come in, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. President, I hope you don't mind this informal visit.
Bill, can we shake hands?
I'd like to very much, sir.
Bill, did you ever meet a man who enjoyed admitting a mistake?
I know I wouldn't, Mr. President.
Well, you've just met one. Bill, I wish I could take back that speech I made about you because I was wrong. I shouldn't have counted on that cantankerous independence of yours instead of party discipline. It's funny. I was sure you'd be my most dangerous opponent on the floor of the Senate. And now you've become the only man I can really count on.
Not the only one, Mr. President.
Nearly, Bill. If you turned defeat into victory, it wasn't because the senators believed in my ideas. It's because you persuaded them.
We didn't win, Mr. President.
How did it turn out?
We didn't win, but we lost by a close margin.
What?
At the beginning, it looked like sure victory for Gray and the bill, but in the end, we lost by only 3 votes.
Hmm.
It means you still face a fight over the veto.
Yes, but I stand a chance now of making it stick.
Of course, you know, if you do veto it, Senator Gray will oppose you on everything you do in the rest of your administration.
I know that. But this is the biggest issue in the country, and I'm not going to pull back now.
Senator Gray.
Yes, Mr. Bontz.
You've seen the president's veto message?
Indeed, I have.
The House of Representatives has decided not to try to override the veto. Do you concede defeat, Senator?
I do not.
I'm going into the Senate chamber now. I've still got some things to say.
Mr. President, I've just come from the Senate.
It's late, Lawton.
Your veto message was read, and Senator Gray made an angry speech. I'm afraid he's become your permanent enemy, sir.
I'm willing to risk that.
Senator Rives came over with me.
Oh. Oh, come on in, Bill.
Good evening, sir.
You look pretty tired.
Well, it was a long session, sir. Has Lawton told you?
I was just going to, Senator.
Bad news?
On the contrary, Mr. President. Neither the Senate nor the House will try to repass the bill over your veto. They know there's no chance.
And Senator Gray?
Well, if the bill had been passed, it would have helped his ambition to become president someday. He's pretty bitter.
That means I'll have trouble from now on.
He's already begun stirring up feeling against you. And besides, there's a strong current of popular feeling that the bill should have been passed and that you used personal friendship to turn some senators against it.
Well, Bill, we know what that charge is worth.
It might have been better if I hadn't come to see you, sir.
Oh, nonsense, Bill.
I wonder what that is.
What'd you say, Lawton?
That noise.
Well, it sounds like a crowd out on Pennsylvania Avenue.
A crowd at this hour? What for?
I'll take a look.
Open the window, will you?
Yes, sir.
Well, look, sir. Hundreds of men coming toward the White House.
Well, what in heaven's name do they want?
I'd better cut out the guards, sir. This looks like trouble.
Down with the veto!
Down with the veto, he said, Mr. President.
The veto? You mean that crowd has come here over this? Jobs! More jobs! Do they think that they've gotten jobs because of the bank? Why, they're wrong.
That crowd looks menacing, Mr. President.
Lawton, do you see any police? Where are the White House guards?
They're not out there. And the crowd's coming under the lawn.
Oh, this is disgraceful.
They're coming right up to the window, Mr. President. I'm going to call the police.
Good, Lawton. Some fool in that crowd.
I'm going down to talk to them.
They're throwing stones. Please, Mr. President, get back there.
They'll quiet down if I talk to them.
Now, sir, don't go. There are guns in that crowd.
Police are arriving, Mr. President. Those men will be caught and punished.
Sarah.
Yes, Mr. President.
About those men who threatened my life. They go on trial tomorrow, I believe.
Yes, Mr. President. There's no doubt they'll be found guilty.
Well, I've been doing a good deal of thinking about those men.
It was an inexcusable act, Mr. President.
Miss Sarah, I want to dictate a letter.
Oh, yes, Mr. President.
To the prosecuting attorney, District of Columbia. My dear sir, we are lucky enough to live in a nation where every man has the right to think as he wishes, the right to his own opinion, and where no other man can punish him for it or make him change it except by peaceful persuasion. This demonstration, though wrong, was an outbreak of popular feeling. The dangers of punishing free opinion are far greater than the dangers of free expression, even if violently expressed. For that reason, the court is petitioned to drop the prosecution of these 30 men and release them. Your Honor, as prosecuting attorney for the District of Columbia, it is my duty to open the presentation of this case. Before us stand these 30 men who led a disorderly mob to the White House and threatened the life of the president. However, Your Honor, the letter I have just read is signed by the President of the United States. Well, Miss Sarah, now that everything is settled, do you think you could hold the fort for a day or so?
Well, I'll try, Mr. President, but I'll have to know where to reach you.
Bill?
Yes, Mr. President.
I thought you and I might go fishing.
Fishing, Mr. Yeah. President? You still go?
Oh, yes, yes. Miss Sarah, did you ever catch a rainbow trout?
No.
Certainly not in the James River.
Why not the James River?
You can't catch rainbow trout on the James River if there are no rainbow trout in the James River.
Bill, you're the most thick-headed man I ever met. You just won't believe a thing until you... Oh, well, I take that back, Bill.
Gentlemen, I'm interested now. Are there any rainbow trout in the James River?
No, Miss Sarah, not one.
Oh, but there are, Miss Sarah, hundreds.
Oh, so this is what's called changing a man's mind by peaceful persuasion. But are there any rainbow trout in the James River?
Miss Sarah, I'll tell you something.
That's right. I don't think either of us have the vaguest idea one way or the other. As you see, the fight over the Bank of the United States ended in victory for the White House. The 30 rioters were released. One friend was lost, and another friend regained. And we never did decide whether or not there are any rainbow trout in the James River. Now, have you guessed yet which president I was tonight? The time was 1841, and that was when John Tyler lived in the White House as Mr. President. Incidentally, John Tyler was the third president we had in the year 1841. Martin Van Buren was succeeded in March of 1841 by William Henry Harrison, who died 1 month later, elevating the vice president, John Tyler, to the presidency. Won't you drop in and see me again next week? I have another interesting story for you about Mr. President. Good night.
Edward Arnold was John Tyler, Mr. President, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 4th, 1947 on ABC. And that brings to a close this hour of True History. On Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.